Good day. Here at Brookings Radio, we are joined by incumbent candidate for the District 7 Republican primary for the House of Representatives, Doug Post. Doug, good to talk to you once again.
Good to talk to you too, Perry.
And first of all, why did you decide to run for another term?
I just don't feel like I'm done yet. The first time around when I ran, it was because I was tired of seeing things go the way they were and not being real happy about it and only being able to complain about it. Now I feel like I'm doing something to straighten out some of the situations I thought were not quite the way that I think that we should probably go about things in this state, especially now in the middle of this COVID situation with the budget issues that we'll be facing. It's something that I can't drop in the middle.
So, tell us a bit about yourself for those who don't know you.
I'm a dairy farmer out here just on the edge of town. My wife and I milk cows, and we raise steers for mostly do private sales through lockers and stuff on the meat through them. And so that's what keeps us busy as far as the farm goes. We've got three kids. My daughter Stephanie is just graduated from high school and heading out to in the middle of June. She'll be going to basic training for Air Guard and then coming back to SDSU. And then Zach's a sophomore, and he's busy farming whenever he can get away and not finishing up his classwork the last week here. And Jacob's in the same boat. He does a lot of our chores around here and tries to get into the tractor whenever he can. So, and we also have two foster kids that we are in the process of adopting. So that's pretty exciting news here too.
That is exciting news. You know, you mentioned the budget, and obviously with what's been going on with the pandemic, that's going to be an overriding factor probably for the next session or two. So your thoughts as we stand today on the budget and where we might be headed?
Well, you know, we've got that $1.25 billion sitting there that the governor has been very actively seeking access to for revenue replacement. And, you know, I guess the difficulty in accessing that is that there's so many other states that do such a poor job of budgeting and managing their funds that even, you know, conservative states with a balanced budget can't get at those funds. I know Senator Rounds has just introduced a bill this morning, or he introduced the language to it that would allow us to get at 25% of those dollars for, and the language is really plain at this point, for any purpose is what it says. So for any purpose, which would be revenue replacement, you'd even use it for the state portion and any federal match programs. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes through the Senate, if that can get any traction. Then, you know, if that were the case, then that would probably be enough to keep us, you know, being able to function with the budget that we have currently.
The state does have a surplus. What are your thoughts on delving into that?
The revenue or the reserve?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's $179 million, 10% of this last year's budget. And, you know, that's what it's there for, is a situation like this. And we certainly can and will be using that to get through this year. That's probably why the governor has indicated that the special session won't be until after the 1st of July when we get into the next fiscal year. Those dollars will be enough, but the only issue there is when we've got a mandatory 10% reserve, so automatically that's all those dollars have to be paid back in the next year's budget, which, you know, it automatically crimps our tightens our ability to use dollars in next year's budget then. So at this point, I'm hopeful that we can, between some revenue replacement and other things, that we'll be able to keep going pretty good. Because the March numbers weren't really all that bad.
No.
You factored in the panic buying.
Let's look a little bit now at the state's response to the pandemic. What have you thought of it? What have you thought of the governor's role so far? And what is the legislative role? Should there be any legislative role, especially come next session?
Well, this is the year of 2020, and we're learning about COVID as we go along. It's awful hard to say now that you would have done things different the way things were coming, you know, the way when it was happening in that time. Overall, I think, you know, the response has been really good. You know, we're to that point now where we understand this virus a little bit better. We've got some methods of treatment. We know which groups are vulnerable, you know, more vulnerable to the disease. And at this point, I think it's time to start opening up carefully, knowing that we can always snap back and restrict, you know, people commingling too much again and spreading this virus, because we've proven we know how to stop it. So now we need to get our businesses healthy again as well.
Doug, it's starting to look like one of the areas that could really be impacted is education, and specifically students that have been, for lack of a better term, lost to the educational system. There are students who haven't taken part in distance learning. They don't know how many yet. Obviously, the legislature is going to have to keep up on that situation.
Yes, and you know, on our veto day, we did pass some legislation that allowed foregoing some of the testing, but you know, that's really something the Department of Education and our local school boards and administrators are going to have to figure out how they want to handle this last quarter with, you know, the students that weren't participating in online classes and didn't complete their work. That's certainly something that we need to address. I guess I'm not professing to be the education expert on how that should be done. That's, you know, the local school boards will probably, with some guidance from the Department of Ed, will be figuring that one out.
What do you think will happen with the 2%? I'm sorry, go ahead.
It certainly does show the importance of parents in the educational process, that if the parents aren't forcing it to happen, then it's, you know, regardless how good the educator is, the kids aren't going to necessarily learn. So.
Yeah. What about the 2% that had been mandated or had been passed for education? You think that's going to be able to hang on to that or make a change?
I would sure like to be able to hang on to it. You know, we started out the session with the budget year with presented to us that was 0%. And to me, that was just unacceptable, because if we can't keep up with inflationary rates, then you just get yourself in a hole. But you have to try and make up at some other point. And, you know, you've lost that income for the people that are working hard. And then you still have to make it up later in a budget by cutting something else, which is why I oppose some of the bills that were somewhat popular in Brookings, was just to make sure that we can get that 2% budget going forward and continue that into the future. Of course, COVID does present a problem there, but, you know, we're waiting to see, you know, with federal guidance on this revenue replacement, exactly what we could do. The CARES Act has been passed for probably a month now, and we still don't know a whole lot more what we can, if we can use it for those purposes or not. We're just really in limbo waiting to see what the federal government does to how we can address some of those things. Now, we did see an improvement in, you know, our March numbers weren't as bad as we thought they could be. We won't know June numbers. In June, we'll find out the April numbers as far as how bad April will be, because it will be significantly worse. But we do have to remember there's a lot of dollars of stimulus that has been pumped into our economy. And, you know, we could have a really bad April and kind of another May that mirrors March. And then we could take off and really have a skyrocketing economy again if we can open up safely.
The pandemic has sort of uncovered some problems with higher education that many people already knew that were there. Decreasing enrollments, increasing costs, and those problems look like they're just going to get worse. I'm guessing the legislature will be dealing with this in some shape or form. Your thoughts on where we're at with higher education right now in South Dakota?
Yeah, well, some of the declining enrollments in higher education in our universities is due to, we had a booming economy where there was a lot of jobs available that were paying rather well. Some of our students, you know, look at it, the opportunity to start at some places for $15 to $17 and be able to move up with insurance and benefits was attractive to them versus looking at, you know, a higher education at a university or a tech school. With the hit the economy has taken, there is always that possibility that the jobs aren't there, and those students will look to higher education again as a way to, you know, be able to get some credits or get a degree that can help them get a better job when the employment situation is a little softer. So you hate to say it's a good thing, but it's one of those, you know, it's directly correlated to each other.
Yeah, there's no doubt during bad times, enrollment goes up. It's just, it's one of the facts of life in America, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Doug,
now, there is dollars in the some of these bills that will help higher education. It probably won't be enough as far as their transition to online learning, doing more classes that way. And, you know, we're still waiting to see exactly where we can use some of that CARES Act, the $1.25 billion, to be able to help, you know, all state agencies, including the Regental system.
Doug, what are you proudest of during your time in Pierre so far?
Oh, I guess I've always been able to say that I voted the way I ran. I told the people of District 7 who I was and what I stood for when I campaigned the first time. And I can say that I've maintained that and always voted that way. I definitely maintained a 100% pro-life voting record. I'm very proud of that because I believe that's very important. I was able to serve on the meth task force and there that last summer and was able to learn a lot about that situation and how we can better utilize treatment. Now, we didn't get everything implemented that we needed to work on there, but it was definitely a learning base that I can apply to other areas as we go forward to help combat that. I don't know.
One final question. When voters cast their ballot either early or on June 2nd, why should they vote Doug Post?
Because I am the Republican candidate that's running on the Republican platform. And I very much believe that that is the right way to approach not only balanced budgeting to the social issues all the way across. I guess I'm a very firm believer in the platform and what we stand for, and I will continue to represent that in Pierre.
Doug Post, thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Yep, thank you, Perry.